I think all of us at some time or the other try to take a second look at our life and see what we're doing and see whether it seems profitable to us to be doing it. Whether we're young and still in high school or college and not yet actually set up our own family and gotten our own life together, I believe we do some thinking about that. What we're going to do, what we're going to accomplish in our life, what will we have to show for it when it's all said and done? Sometimes if we're a bit older in midlife, we begin to look back on what have we accomplished in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years and try to determine whether what we've been doing has been worthwhile and whether we've accomplished anything or not. And I presume, although I don't know for sure, but some of you that are in the later years of life, I'm sure that you're looking back over 40 or 50 years of living and keeping a family and working and doing the various things that you do in your life. And I'm sure there are moments when you contemplate what you've done, what you've accomplished, and what you can still get done in the years that remain. This is not uncommon for people in this life to do that. I think probably it's something almost everyone does. And that's what we want to do this evening in our lesson. We're going to be guided through our study, and my outline is fairly simple. You can follow me, if you will, in the book of Ecclesiastes. As one of the wisest men that ever lived upon the face of the earth, did essentially the same thing. And I'm talking about Solomon. We want to try to figure out tonight, what is life all about? What are my life goals? What do I plan to accomplish while I live here? And you'll be participating with me in the lesson in that way, because you're going to have to examine that for yourself. And finally, we want to try to figure out, what will I achieve when I am dead and in the grave and other people are looking back upon my life and Jehovah looks upon my life? What can it be said that I have achieved in my life? The book of Ecclesiastes, as we mentioned before, records Solomon's search for some of these same answers. As he began to look at the different facets of his life and to examine them and to try to find meaning in them, to try to find purpose for what he was doing here upon this earth. So we'll be following his search, and again, I hope that individually each of you will try to personalize it and apply it to your life and answer the questions as they pertain to what you're doing day by day. Solomon came to the conclusion that the typical life of man is vanity, that it's vain, that according to Webster, the word vain means of no real value or significance, worthless. Solomon concluded that what most of us do with our lives, what he had done with a lot of his life, was vanity. It was vain, purposeless, worthless. When he looked at the different components of it, he couldn't see much value in them. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 2, Solomon sort of sums up this when he says, "Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." So many things that we do in this life, when we look back on them and say, what purpose did they really serve? We can't find much purpose in them. Well, what exactly did Solomon mean when he just virtually said all of these things were vanity, vain, worthless, purposeless? Well, I think what we have to look at first is some of the different components that make up our life, the different things that a lot of us try to make the center of our life, and a lot of people outside this building find these as the keys to their life and sometimes the reason why they're so miserable in the way they're living. Some people try to find the meaning of life in their work. Whether you're a newspaper editor, a banker, work in a shop, whatever you do, some people try to find the meaning of their life in their secular employment. They devote every waking hour and minute to trying to accomplish that job and to be the very best they can be in that particular position. They go to school, they devote a lot of time to study, or they just put all of their energy into that work. Some of these people we call workaholics. Solomon discovered that work in and of itself was vanity as well. What profit is there in it? In Ecclesiastes 1, again, the first chapter, in verses 3 through 5, the preacher says this: "What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh. But the earth abideth forever. The sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose." Do you ever think about work that way? You get up and you get to work at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, perhaps, if you're on a day shift. You work through the day till 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, and you go home, you eat, you watch a little bit of television, you go to bed, you sleep all night, and you get up again the next morning at 7 or 8 o'clock and off to work, and the cycle goes on, day after day. The sun comes up and the sun goes down. You've done your day's work, and there's another one before you. Life passes, and we're consistently going through that cycle. Not only does the sun rise and the sun go down, that is, days pass, but generations pass with people with this cycle of work, on and on. And when we're all done, what has been accomplished? I don't believe Solomon's suggesting that we ought to be lazy and not work. That's contrary to other teaching in the Bible. We have to provide for our daily bread. We have to provide for our own. There's a lot of teaching in the Bible contrary to one being lazy. However, if we try to find the focus and meaning of life in work, it's an abysmal area to concentrate our efforts. Solomon found that these generations just passed one by one. And when a man has done all of his work and concentrated his entire life in his work, and he dies, what does he hold in his hand? Someone inherits the efforts that he has put forth, and he has nothing to show for his labor. Days come and go rapidly. In the second chapter, in verses 18 and 19, he addresses this again. "Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have shown myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity." All of the effort that he put forth, and he doesn't even know whether the individual that reaps the benefit of all the work he's done, he doesn't know whether that man or woman is going to be a wise man or a fool with it. And I'm sure that some of you are aware of people that have spent their entire life building financial security and accomplishing things with their work, and they died, and they had a son or a daughter who, in terms of handling that, was an absolute fool. Just squandered it and it was all gone, and the one who did the work had nothing to show for it himself. Another thing about work that Solomon found was a problem was that the accomplishments that come about by work can sometimes just put you in an enviable position among other people. In chapter 4 and verse 4 of Ecclesiastes, "Again I considered all travail and every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit." If we concentrate all of our labor and our work in getting a position, in making money with our position, we may in this life only accomplish having some of the people that were the very closest to us be envious of us and virtually hate us for what we've accomplished. So how much value is there in it? You can see the point from King Solomon's point of view. Here he was, a king with immense wealth. He'd accomplished many things, and often, as is the case, instead of people being joyous about his accomplishments, they were envious or hateful toward him. And finally, over in the 9th chapter of Ecclesiastes, in verses 11 and 12, we find something that I think we oftentimes miss here, particularly some of us who are younger, and that is that a lot of the things that we have or don't have as a result of our work are as much a result of chance as they are of our efforts and our abilities. In chapter 9, and verses 11 and 12, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. You know, sometimes in our present day and time, those of us who haven't lived through something like the Depression or something of that sort, think that all of the wonderful things that we're accomplishing, what we can have with the money that we get from working, that it's because of our skill and our ingenuity and our knowledge, and we rather lift ourselves up as saying we have accomplished so much. But I think what Solomon is saying, that most of us, if we work no harder in the 1930s than we work today, we'd starve to death. If the circumstances, the chance happenings of the things in this world were different, we could work three times as hard as we work today, be three times as intelligent, know three times as much as anybody in this room knows, and we would still eke out 50 cents or a dollar a day, something of that sort. It just wouldn't matter if the circumstances were such. Whereas I think many of us are well acquainted with, when illness and disease strike us, it doesn't pick out just the people that haven't worked that hard or haven't done that much intellectually. We can be at the very peak of our earning power and our working, accomplishing so much, and if the chance and the happenings of this world are such that our life is taken, it is gone then. If we leave here this evening and go down here to 35 and North Fairfield Road, it may be all over if somebody ignores that red light. Chance has so much impact upon our lives. If we try to focus all of the meaning of life in our work, we're going to lose. And Solomon realized that, and we need to realize it. Another thing that Solomon looked at, and it's very closely related to this concept of work, although it's not always that way, that is wealth. Some of us aim for wealth and think that that's going to be the meaning of our life if we can simply get enough of this world's goods to put us in a comfortable position in this life. Some people work toward it, and some of the same problems we've already talked about are involved there. Some people simply have it handed to them, and Solomon was probably one who, it was probably somewhere in between. You know, he inherited a lot of that by becoming king, and yet he also worked toward a lot of these things too, even beyond the will of God. But wealth, it's often the object that we try to wrap up the meaning of life around. If I can have $50,000 a year, I'll be happy. I can be comfortable. I will have achieved my goal. Solomon found, and believe me, Solomon, as far as wealth was concerned, we can hardly imagine the wealth that he had. It would have probably been in the billions and billions of dollars if we could translate that to today's standards. It's just almost unimaginable, the wealth that he controlled and the power that he had through it. And yet, being so far advanced in wealth over all of us, Solomon found this to be vanity as well. Let's go back to the second chapter again of Ecclesiastes, in verses 4 through 11. There Solomon said this, "I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water, to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I gat me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all them that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. There's not very many of us that can say we have a multiplicity of houses and that we've got servants and maidens in our home, and we've got so many that they're having children and they're becoming servants and maidens and helpers in our home that we've got it all in that respect. We can't say that, but Solomon could. He tested the very extreme of wealth, and when he was finished, he said it's all vanity and vexation. He had houses. You know, I think this is something that most of us that have ever purchased a house can attest to. When we don't have one, we think, if I can just get that house, I'll be a happy man or a happy woman. We get the house, and for a little while we're happy, and then we want a bigger one. And perhaps we can get the bigger one, and before long we want a bigger one yet. And I suppose some of the people that have castles are the ones that have taken that feeling to its extreme conclusion. We're never quite satisfied with them. Solomon must have tried the same tack that some of us have. He had a garden, and he had an orchard, and he had a vineyard, and that didn't really make him happy either. He had it all, servants, the silver and the gold, the money. He had just untold wealth in terms of money. Had so much he could have people come in and entertain him with music, and yet it was all vanity and vexation to him. It didn't give him the happiness that he desired. It didn't provide the meaning of life that he was looking for. You know, there's problems with wealth. And of course, Solomon is undoubtedly the individual that can speak with most expertise on the problems of wealth. Over in the fifth chapter, in verses 10 through 15, he outlines some of those problems that he encountered. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increased, they are increased that eat them, and what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth the son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. First of all, the problem with wealth, Solomon said, if you set your goal on that and try to find the meaning and substance of life in it, is that you're never going to be satisfied, he said. Well, we really don't have to have Solomon to tell us that. We can look at people around about us going after the money, and if we're honest with ourselves, we can see it in our very lives that we're never satisfied with what we have. There's hardly a person in this auditorium that can say that he is perfectly well satisfied with the wealth that he has and isn't always trying to get a little bit more. To improve our life or our wealth situation just a little bit more. We separate ourselves from the crowd by saying that we're not as greedy and thirsty for all of this as other people out in the world, but we find ourselves in the very same position. Wealth will not satisfy. It doesn't matter how much you have, you'll always want more. Solomon was in that predicament. He had so much that he couldn't spend it all. He couldn't use it all. I doubt if he could even keep account of it all. and yet he wanted more. Something interesting that Solomon discovered that I think most of us overlook a lot of times, and that is when you begin to assimilate this world's goods, when you begin to have wealth, it costs more to have more. Solomon put it this way. He said, if a man has a lot, he's got a lot more mouths to feed. If you've got a kingdom under your control, it takes a lot of servants to keep it up. If you've got three bathrooms in your house instead of two, there's three times as much to take care of as there was before. If you've got a 4,000 square foot house instead of a 1,000 square foot house, there's that much more carpet to put down, that much more maintenance to do, that much more that you have to involve your life in keeping that wealth and sustaining it, and it becomes a chore. Another thing about wealth is that if you don't have any, you don't worry about anybody taking it. But if you have it, Solomon said, you can hardly sleep, worrying about somebody going to take it away. The man with the mansion has a stone wall around his place with electric fences in the top of it, and he has security guards and security dogs and alarm systems. He spends as much as you or I make in a year just trying to make sure somebody doesn't take it away from him. And Solomon said, on top of all that, it can all be lost just like that. You can be on the top of the world with wealth one day and it all be gone the next, and there's not a dime to give your son or your daughter as an inheritance. Finally, the most crucial point of it, if we're going to center our focus and meaning of life in wealth, we have to realize that when our heart stops beating and we're put in the grave, we're not going to take a nickel or a dime of it with us. We came into this world without anything, and that's the way we're going to go out. And so when we sum up our life and say, what have we accomplished? If we put all of our emphasis in wealth, we have absolutely nothing. The account books will say zero when it's done. Well, perhaps some of us realize this about work and wealth and the futility and vanity of that, but we may turn our attention to what Solomon called pleasure. I think what we would more likely term recreation and entertainment today. And we can see in the world around us people by the millions who are trying to focus the meaning of life and the enjoyment of life and the accomplishment that they find in life in their recreation and their entertainment. We're always seeking a thrill, trying to find fun, trying to find pleasure in this life. And Solomon said in chapter 2 and verse 1 that all this was vanity as well. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. Solomon had all these musicians in his court that could entertain him. He had his fabulous gardens that he could enjoy for his recreation. Undoubtedly, there were just an immense number of things that Solomon could turn to for entertainment as a king with all the wealth and majesty that he had. We can probably not even imagine what was available to him, and yet he said it was all vanity. Today, if we were to individualize that and bring it down to our time in life, we would probably have to look at baseball and football and soccer and television and the theater and concerts and boating and camping and, well, you see the point. I can't even make the list tonight of all of the things that we seek out to do to entertain and to find pleasure in this life. And yet if we evaluate, what do I hold in my hands that I can say that I've accomplished when I'm finished with that? When I've won all the games there are to win, when I have set all the records that there are to set, when I have accomplished everything there is to do in sporting and entertainment, and I've seen everything and done everything that there is to do, what do I hold? What have I accomplished? And Solomon essentially says nothing, because it's vanity. It accomplishes little. And if our central focus in life and our seeking for meaning in life is there, we have lost. Does it satisfy us? No, not really. You know, if I can hit two home runs, the next time I want to hit three. and the next time four. And if I make two goals this time in soccer, the next time I'm going to want to do more. If I've seen one movie that is spectacular, the next time I'm going to have to see one that's a little bit more spectacular, or I'm not going to be satisfied. We can never be satisfied with this. You know, when it comes to our sporting events, we can only go so far up the ladder till we get to be, what is it, Terrell, about 30? And then we can't achieve the goals like we do. In fact, as far as finding any satisfaction there, I imagine it begins to decline because these young squirts are outdoing us every day. We can't do it like we used to. Vanity. If we wrap our life up in that, it is vanity. Some people realize all of that work and wealth and pleasure are not the areas that we ought to focus our life. And they say, I'll seek wisdom, or the way we put it today, I'll get an education. I'll become a highly educated individual. I'll try to learn everything there is to learn. And beyond that, I'm going to write a book about it so that other people can understand it and know it after I'm dead. I will accomplish something. Well, Solomon took that course too, because you remember that one of the things Solomon asked God for was that he be given wisdom. And God gave it to him, and Solomon, even for all of the things that he had done wrong in his life, is accounted to be one of the most wise men that ever lived. And yet in the 7th chapter, verses 23 and 24, Solomon says this about seeking wisdom. All this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. That which is far off and exceeding deep, who can find it out? What Solomon discovered is that no matter how much we go to school, no matter how many degrees that we achieve, there are always going to be hundreds and thousands of things out there that we cannot understand. You may understand more than the person sitting next to you. You may understand more than everyone else in this world when you get through seeking wisdom and education. But there's going to be more things you don't know than you know when you go to the grave. There are always going to be questions that baffle us. We're not going to be able to find in seeking education and wisdom the satisfaction we want. In fact, the more we learn, the more we realize that we don't know. Is generally the truism of education. In chapter 12 and verse 12, Solomon says something that my wife will probably write down and hold against me the rest of my life. He says, and further, by these, my son, be admonished, of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. Of writing books and studying, we could do that on and on and on, and if we don't apply what we've learned and studied to make some positive accomplishment in this life, if it doesn't do us some good beyond our being smart, then we haven't accomplished a thing. And there is no end to the books and the study that we can do. In chapter 1 and verse 9, Solomon says, there is nothing new under the sun. And that says something about us people in the newspaper business. There's nothing really new under the sun. It's new. Maybe different people, different places, but the things that happen in this world, there's nothing really new. And if we're always pointing ourselves toward educating and becoming wise in the things that are happening, we're actually just going over the things that have happened again and again throughout the generations that have passed. And finally, Solomon discovered something that I think a lot of people are beginning to learn today. In the first chapter, verses 16 and 17, he discovers that the seeking and the obtaining of wisdom often brings us a great deal of grief as well. I communed with my own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. Solomon discovered that the more he learned, and he said that he had become of the most wise in Jerusalem in his day. He said that the more we learn, the more grief and sorrow that comes to us. You know, sometimes the old saying, ignorance is bliss, is true. Some of the things that we come to understand through our study and our wisdom only tend to bring sorrow to our lives when we realize the true state of affairs that we live in. Solomon discovered that too. And thus, if we seek to find the purpose of our life in education and study and book learning and wisdom, we're going to find, like Solomon, that it isn't there. Preeminence is another category that Solomon achieved and yet found no particular glory in. If we seek status or political position in this world and think that once we have been elevated and separated from the rest of the people in this world and we have status and we have a position and a title, that will bring us happiness and fulfill us and achieve for us what we want out of this life, we're mistaken there, because a whole lot like wealth, there virtually is no end to the positions that we can seek to climb to. And as Solomon discovered in the second chapter in verse 12, what if when you become king, when you're at the very highest position there is no other higher position in the world that you can achieve, what then? What are you going to have to look forward to and seek beyond that? Once you're at the very pinnacle, what then? Solomon's conclusion of all of this is found over in the last chapter, the 12th chapter, and verses 13 and 14, the last two verses of this particular writing. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. He said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. That is the whole duty of man. And realize that all of the things that we've talked about, Solomon studied to their furthest extent. He was able to press them even beyond what we can, and he found them all to be vanity. And when he had concluded, he said, where our meaning in life has to be found is in serving God, in being obedient to Him, and fearing Him, looking forward to the judgment when God is going to judge what we've done in this life, whether it be good or whether it be bad. The basis for his finding are quite simple. He understood that every one of us is going to die. There's not an individual in this auditorium this evening that isn't going to die someday, either in the next few minutes or the next few years or within the decades to come, we're going to die. In the second chapter in verse 18, he found that discovery and wrote it down. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that should be after me. He knew there was going to be death, and someone after him would take it all. In the third chapter, in verses 18 through 20, I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them and might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them, as the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go unto one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Solomon's point here was not that man and animals are exactly the same in God's sight, but in one respect, man and animal are exactly alike, and that is that we all die, we're all going back to the dust from which we came. You think about that a little bit. You know, death is something that we do not give serious enough consideration to. We try to put it off and we don't want to think about it, but the end of all of us is death. And death is that line where we have finished our time on this earth, and whatever we're going to have accomplished is going to be cut off right there. And the judgment that comes thereafter is going to be determined by what we did before that time. And thus it's important that we not only realize that, yes, people die, but realize the importance of getting our life in order before that time comes. I think Solomon realized that. Solomon also pointed out that understanding that we're going to die, that there's going to be a resurrection of the dead, that we need to fear God. I think as we talked about once before, sometimes we try to change that fear completely into the idea of respecting or having reverence for God. But what God has held out before us is a life or death situation beyond the grave. Either we're going to heaven to be rewarded by Him, or we're going to eternal hell and punishment if we have rejected Him. And I think that's the significance of what Solomon is saying when he says, fear God and keep His commandments. That is the whole duty of man. We talked on the radio program this morning some about the resurrection, how we'll receive a new body after this life, a spiritual body, a resurrected body, and we'll go to be with God and to be judged. We have to give some consideration to that now. If you're 13 or 14 or 15 years old, you need to be giving consideration to it now. If you're 25 or 30 or 35 years old, you need to be giving some consideration to it now. And if you're 65 or 70 or 75 or 80, you certainly need to be giving some consideration to it now. When you die, the next thing that comes to you is the judgment, and you'll have to give answer for the things that you've done in this body, whether they be good or bad. We need to be thinking about that, folks. Thinking about what happens if I do die in a car wreck tonight, or if another tornado comes through town and kills several of us tonight. What is going to be my state when I wake up, so to speak, in the judgment? What can I say about my life? All the wealth, the work, the wisdom, the pleasure that I've enjoyed, am I going to hold that out before God and say, this has been the meaning of my life, this is what I've accomplished? Or are we going to have more to show Him than that? That is the question that we're putting out this evening, that we need to think about, each one of us individually. What is my life? What have I accomplished with my life? What answer am I going to give to God when He says, what have you done with the life that I have given to you? Sin blocks us from having an eternity with God. It stands in our way. The God of heaven has sent His Son into this world to die and to provide the opportunity for that sin to be removed and for us to have the opportunity of eternal life. But to do that, we have to commit ourselves to Christ. We have to make our life and our life's purpose, in our lifestyle, everything that we do and breathe in this world, be committed to the Son of God and to serving Him and to teaching other people to do the same. We have to be willing to confess Him before other people to say that, yes, I believe He's the Son of God and that He died for my sins. We have to be willing to do that, unashamedly do that in this life. We need to repent of the way we've been living in the past. That means turn around and go a new direction. Start a new life. And when we are baptized in the waters of baptism, what we're doing is burying our old life, being resurrected to a new life, and we're going to live differently. We're going to have a different set of goals, a different set of objectives, and wisdom and work and all of those things are going to be secondary elements of our life. Our first and primary element, our major goal, will be to fear God and keep His commandments. What is your life all about tonight? Those of you that are sitting in this audience and have listened to me patiently, look at your own life. What is it all about? Where are you going with it? Do you have an objective? If your life ends tonight, what can you say about the life that you've lived? If tonight you were to have to answer to God in the judgment, what would you hold out as the accomplishments of your life here upon this earth? We're going to sing an invitation song, and I hope that if there are those of you in the audience whose lives are not going in the right direction, if they're not committed to Christ, you'll take the opportunity tonight to be obedient to the gospel while we stand and sing.